Thank you for listening to this talk given at the Center for Spiritual Living, Midtown, Atlanta.
I'm just going to go ahead and get this out of the way. There's going to be a word that you're going to hear come out of my mouth that you're never going to hear again from this stage. Somebody said it was going to be transgendered and I was going to make an announcement today, but that's not it. The word is chakra. 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 You're never going to hear me say that again from this stage except through my whole talk today. And the reason being is Paul and I are very protective of you. We really want to make sure you are very clear about the one power, the one life, the one creator, the one mind, the one. But the minute I bring up chakra, you all think of seven, and you all think of seven things like that. And so Paul and I never will speak of chakras. So that's why I'm saying I almost posted this on Facebook last night about chakra, chakra, chakra. Let's get it out of the way because you're never going to hear me say it again. So I am going to talk about that today, but I want you to understand that I am talking about the one, the one, the one. You always need to understand that. So this morning I want to talk about the way to be alive, and I mean really alive. More than just waking up in the morning and seeing that you have a pulse and saying, thank you, God, I'm alive. It's more than that. There's something more to life than just to be alive. Life was meant to be lived. Alive, really alive. This past week's been really crazy with all the media going on, and it all comes down to Thursday. Everything happened on Thursday this past week. So we had this great debate that was happening on Thursday, but then also Thursday night was John Stewart retiring. So you had somebody up there, and I was at the gym yesterday, and it was just showing all the news up there, and they went on for hours about the goodbye from John Stewart and everything like that, but they went on for more hours with all the hellos from all the Republican candidates that wanted to get up there and say hello to you and introduce you to who they were. So there was a lot going on with that. And what really came to mind was with the media coming up, and another word you're never going to hear me say from the stage again is Peggy Noonan. For anybody that knows Peggy Noonan, you'll never hear those words come from my mouth again either. However, because she's a political analyst, and the same thing is what we teach up here, there's one. There's not all these different things going on. And so, again, Paul and I are very protective of you. But Peggy Noonan yesterday had a great one simple sentence that says exactly what my talk was about. And I've been pulling this talk together for about 2 weeks now. And she said this about watching the debates. I wondered as I contemplated the idea of a long row of guys in ties up on the stage, who my eye would go to. Your eyes know more than you do. It's drawn for reasons you don't understand. I like that. Your eyes know more than you do. It's drawn for reasons you don't understand. So here is Angela up here on the stage doing the introduction. We don't talk about what my talk about, and she said exactly the same thing. You may want to close your eyes and let all that distraction go away because all of that's the distraction. But you know what? Your eyes really know something more than you do that you don't understand. And this is where I get really excited because you know me. I'm at a movie theater. I'm reading the newspaper. That's religious science. That's religious science. Because I do understand why my eyes know more than I do. I do understand the reason of that. Because I know that as I watch that, not only is my conscious mind watching, but so is my subconscious mind. And once you let your conscious mind get out of the way of thinking, can your subconscious mind give you hints as to what's going on? You see, of course, we all think we're intelligent beings and we can use our own minds, so we barely allow the subconscious mind to come in. And I don't just mean the subconscious mind of the universe that's being creative and producing for us. I mean the subconscious mind of the universal, because that's at our disposal. Our subconscious mind is an aspect of the universal subconscious mind, and that is why our eyes know more than we do. We think these are my eyes seeing for all of this, but it's my eyes of the universal contemplating what's going on out here. It's through my eyes that the universe sees. It's through your eyes that the universe sees. Our eyes know where to go. when we look at a guy, a row of guys in ties. Our mind knows. Our eyes know where to go when we stand and look at beauty. Our eyes know where to go when we see sadness. Our eyes know where to go when we see lack. Because we're not just using our conscious mind, we're also using our subconscious mind that's connected with the universe. When we finally let go of the conscious mind and allow the subconscious mind of the universe to come through, it is only then do we allow the wisdom of the universe to come in and not just our own wisdom, because my own wisdom is limited. And so the way to be alive, to be really alive, is to, yes, wake up with a heartbeat, but to allow the all of life to come through you. Understand what it is you're looking at. Yes, with your conscious choices, but so much more life is trying to come through your subconscious mind. And this teaching, this center, teaches you to peel away all the layers of just your thinking and to allow this universal level of understanding, this universal level of thought that's always been trying to come through to show up. But we push it down. And society tells us to push it down. So we do, and we all get in line with society. And so I'm preparing for my Power of Myth class that's coming up in the fall. And it shows exactly why the human mind through all the ages can come into existence and only live a half a life, not knowing that the all of life is ready to come through. Ernest Holmes, the founder of religious science, says the universe is alive. It is conscious. It's awake. It's aware. It is love and life. It is law and order. So I like it when we say that it is alive. The universe is alive, conscious and aware. But if you are not, then you're really not alive. We're just walking through life. In the Power of Myth class, Joseph Campbell, who did the PBS series on myth, really relating to life, broke it down into three easy sections that I want to share with you this morning. It's living in the world, coming into awareness, and living in the sacred. Living in the world, coming into awareness, living in the sacred. So there is this living in the world, and this is what Angela was talking about, but then there's something that happens when we come into the awareness. When you start coming to this teaching, do you understand my happiness does not come from the things out there that make me happy? My happiness comes from in here is where it comes. That's coming into the awareness. And then living in the sacred is walking around and you're happy, just knowing that every corner you're going to turn, your happiness is going to be there. Every corner. Campbell says there's a repeated pattern in all of societies of living life, and that's living in the world and thinking that that's all there is. And you've seen me up here before. I talk about the law of cause and effect. That's all that Paul and I talk about up here is the law of cause and effect. And I say cause is over here. It comes through and out here in the world of effect through the use of our mind. Our mind takes it, the allness of the universe, brings it out, and it gets the parking space. It gets the car. It gets all of that by the use of our mind. So then becoming aware that there must be something more. How many went through life thinking that it was just all about the job and the spouse and everything like that? And then one morning you woke up and said, there's got to be something more. Oh, I'm the only one. So, so there's got to be something more. And then knowing there is something more, living in the sacred, living the life with your, yes, your super conscious mind, because I stand up here and I go, I love David Barrett. I get up here and I say all the time how much I love David Barrett. But as super as my conscious mind is, my subconscious mind connected to the universal subconscious mind is spectacular. It's spectacular. And you need to know that that's what you have together with that. So I shared with you the same story I'm going to be sharing with you again this morning, a story with Moses. He was living in Egypt, living in the material world. You know, he gets up to the king and says, let my people go. And you know, the king says, no. And that's living all in the material world and all of our material things. And our ego mind is so in all of this. And all that Moses story is each one of us, we're all connected with the car and the house, and all those things is what we're really connected to. And so you get this little bit of inspiration that there's more than life than just this, and you say, let my people go. So when I shared this story with you before, guess what? How many times did Moses have to go to the king to say, let my people go? 7 times. Sent 7 plagues there all the time. Why is that? Our ego mind doesn't want to let go. It likes the car. It likes the house. It doesn't want to let go of those things. So we talked about the material world. Then Moses goes and he lives in Midian. I've got a greater idea about how this life is going to show up. And I'm becoming aware of all that, but I'm not really quite getting everything. And we have to wander in the desert for 40 years. But then finally, Moses starts living in the knowing that the universe, God, will provide. The universe will provide. So Campbell, Joseph Campbell, in his Power of Myth book, and what we're using as a companion to that, that'll be online. Actually, I've got a handout out there on the table. He explains the level of life's awareness in many different ways, but one of them is through chakras. And yes, this is the only time I'm going to save chakra. Because, like I said, I don't want you going to seven. When you understand, when we talk about the conscious mind and the subconscious mind, we're not talking about two minds. We're talking about one mind, two aspects of the same mind. So I want to make sure that you're very clear when I talk about chakras, I'm not talking about seven things. I'm talking about this wholeness that is kind of explained in seven different ways. So it's the same thing when we talk about the one mind, but we talk about two different levels of consciousness and subconscious mind. So my mind shuts down when people talk about chakras. Actually, if you're titled to a class that you're teaching has chakra in it, I'm not going. And I shut down. So I don't want you to shut down. I want you to just hold on with me for a little bit. Think about how they relate to your growing up and your awareness of your body and your life and all the different stages that you went through. And when you get into the class, it just goes on with myth after myth that just supports all of this. So the first three chakras are all about living in this world. It's all about understanding this. It's Moses living in Egypt with all the gold and the palace and the women. And the first chakra is the root chakra, and it's located at the base of the spine. Here, the worldview is uninspired materialism. It's materialism. We have all of these things. The psychology here at the root chakra is reactive, not active. It's reactive. The zeal for life is largely absent. There's a grim grip, is just holding on for existence at this level of chakra. Here it is the task of the yogi to break this grip and release this jewel made, his own shakti, the ascent to this higher sphere. So if you're all the way down at chakra one, you need to let go of that. That's the root chakra. I kind of call this caveman existence, just trying to stay alive. The second chakra moves up a little bit and goes to her special abode. Her special abode. This goes to sexuality and creativity. And yes, this chakra is located at the genital level. The worldview from this point is of sexual activity. I know I'm the only one that when I was in my teens and early 20s that all I thought about was sex, 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 oh, some food, sex, 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 oh, some food. But that's just me. I know you guys were more wise and all of that. Thank you. So do I. The psychology here is one of compulsive sexuality. Compulsiveness shows studies on how many times, it's so funny when I read this story about how many times a day does a man think about sex versus how many times does a woman think about sex during the day. So there's this compulsiveness there. Myths, deities, and religious rites are understood and experienced in sexual terms. How many paintings through all the centuries do you see naked gods and goddesses all the time? It's really this sexual kind of thing. The third chakra moves up to the navel. This is the city of the shining jewel. The worldview here is of violence and consumption. I'm going to talk a little bit more about the violence and consumption. The psychology here is to consume, to master, to turn the world into one's own. So you finally get through, you understand all of this, and now you want to start to consume. You start moving into past the sexual thing that you want to claim one sexual partner as your own. So we have all of these marriage myths throughout throughout all societies and everything about how, what does it mean to kind of control that sexual energy? But then also, too, the creative aspect of not just the sexual aspect, but it's we're starting to build our world. We're starting to build our career, and we're pulling all of that. We're doing that in the third chakra. We're pulling all of those things. It's the consumption to master, to turn the world into my world. This is my world. Even sex here becomes more about conquest and power than that of eroticism. The function at this level is organizing your life, establishing a family, building a business. The focus here is on growth. So Campbell says all three of these lower chakras are the modes of man living in the world, in his native state. Outwardly turned. He's looking at everything out there. Here, the modes of the lovers, these are the fighters, the builders, the accomplishers. Joys and sorrows on these levels are functions of achievements in the world out there. What people think of one, what has been gained, what has been lost. Popular religion and popular society and popular politics all works on those three levels. They work at that. What is it that we've gained? What is it that we've lost? These levels are all ego-oriented, and the action must be controlled by social law. We have to put social laws in place to control all of these things. It is at these first three chakras that we establish our lives physically and socially. At this level is where we think there are pairs of opposites. Down here, we think there's pairs of opposites. It's the first story, the first mythological story we learn in our Christian life is that there's a Garden of Eden and then there's a man and a woman. We start learning of duality. We start learning that there's pairs of opposites at this level in those first three chakras. We think there is male and female. We think there is black and white. We think there is love and fear. We think there is light and dark. We think there is masculine and feminine. We think there's success and failure. We think there is spirit and matter. And at this lower level, we see duality. The key word in all of that is we think we see those things. Also, at this level, we establish ourselves with society. We follow along with the societal roles and the rules. Here's where we get married according to the rules of society. But the whole mythological idea is about trying to bring the pairs of opposites back together again. There's even a mythological story of how we all were cut in half at birth. That literally an aspect of us was already together. That there was a male-female aspect, a male-male aspect, and a female-female aspect. All of them cut in half at birth. And what we're trying to figure out through all of that is to come back to our wholeness. To come back and bring our other half back there. Here we start establishing our back-to-the-one relationship, like I said, to bring those two halves back together. Also at this level of living in the world, do we not only try to fit in with societal norms, we start forging our own self-identity. This is with money, status, and accumulation of a livelihood or a career. Again, these first three chakras are thinking things are out there. Money is out there, so we think, Campbell says, if you pursue money as an end, you're off the beam. If you pursue money as the end, you're off the beam. Also, this is where we think there is status to be attained. Like, how many friends do I have on Facebook? You got lots of friends on Facebook. I've got three. So we think there's status in that. How many letters do I have behind my name? Like PhD, JD, whatever it is. Ah, status. But Campbell has all kinds of stories saying that status rarely comes following your own path. Here it is that you must modify your life to suit a person or a group or a philosophy. That's what's happening with status. In setting up the career, your livelihood, let go of what other people think of me and follow your bliss. Follow your bliss. All three of those move into chakra four. Chakra four is the heart chakra. Chakra four is when you start to move away from living into the world and you start coming into awareness. Let my people go. Chakra 4 is called not hit. Not hit. Not hit is the beginning of the spiritual life, the awakening. Not hit refers to the sound not made by two things striking together. All the sounds we hear are two things striking together. What is the sound that is not made by two things striking together? It's the sound of the energy of which the universe is a manifestation. It is the antecedent to all things. How many of you have swum in the ocean and just heard this clicking sound? You don't hear the motors, you don't hear anything. You've been out somewhere so much and all you hear is this clicking sound. Anybody? I've heard it. It's been great. Guess what? You know what the astronauts hear at the farthest reaches of space that they've been to? Clicking. Clicking. And it's just this energy. It's just this energy. This antecedent to things. It's energy. The heart chakra is the opening of the spiritual dimension. This is where you begin a hero's journey. This is where you sit there and you start realizing all of this and all of this that has been built up on the first three chakras. It's finally in your heart chakra do you sit there and say, there's got to be something better than this. There's got to be something better. So this is the beginning of your own true adventure. This is when you're ready to leave the plane of the physical, the subject-object world as a primary consciousness, and move into the realm of spiritual consciousness. This is what Peggy Noonan was speaking of when she said that the I knows more than you do. Exactly what Angela said in her opening treatment. But you have to be ready to move into this realm. A lot of us don't want to move into that realm. That lets go of all of those things, and we don't want to let go of those things. From this point of view, the lower powers become spiritualized. The very doing of the things in the first three chakras become realizations of chakras 5, 6, and 7. You just kind of flip them up into the spiritual aspect of you. So Campbell's very clear saying how 1 relates to 7, 2 to 6, 3 to 5, and it's connected by this heart chakra, this heart chakra. Campbell says when you reach the upper chakras, you don't do without the first three. You still have all of those three, survival, sex, and power. You don't destroy the first three floors of a building when you get to the fourth. You build on those. The fourth chakra connects the lower three with the upper three. It is at chakra 4 that you have mythological stories of resurrection and crucifixion. Resurrection and crucifixion. What is it that you need to crucify? The old way of living. What is it that you need to resurrect and step into is a whole new way. You need to die to the old and rebirth to the new. The symbol of the cross that ties all things on the horizontal plane and the upper and lower plane. That's what the cross represents, is the same thing. Then you get to chakra 5, and this is called purify. This is the third level of living in the sacred. This is at the level of the larynx. This is the chakra of spiritual effort to hold back the animal system from which the energies come. All of those things down here are trying to come up, and we want to go back to those ways of living. So one must handle oneself with ferocity to put down the animalistic instincts and urges. So here is where we start letting go of those pairs of opposites that we started holding on to. It's up here and at the larynx level, above the heart chakra, that we start sitting there saying, there is no black and white. There is no male and female. There is no me and you. There is none of those things. You start understanding the oneness of life that really is. Ernest Holmes, it's funny because in his 1926 version of the Science of Mind text, he has a whole chapter on sexual transmutation. Sexual transmutation. Here he said that once we rise above the thinking of sex part of our lives and use that same energy towards the spiritual aspects of our lives, do we then become really alive? He calls it sexual transmutation. So David, as the teenager, 20-something kid that always thought of sex, 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 food, sex, 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 if you turn that into something greater and used all that energy into more spiritual understanding, are you transmuting that energy? So that was in 1926, but then he came out with the 1938 version. Is sexual transmutation in our Science of Mind textbook right now? Not at all. Why is that? Because Ernest Holmes bought into the seven plagues that were hitting and all there, and somebody says, maybe you shouldn't have a chapter on sexual transmutation in your book. So it was taken out. So if you want to read about sexual transmutation, you got to go back to the 1926 version. And of course, I learned that out at a Sulamar in the very next week. I had a book on sexual transmutation. I wanted to hear about that. He said that once we rise above that, do we really become alive? You get to chakra 6, the lotus of command. This is located between the eyebrows. This is the chakra of heaven, the highest chakra in the world of incarnated forms. Here we are walking out, we're incarnated. How are we doing that? Ramakrishna said, once you understand this, one is tempted to stay there tasting the juice. Stay there tasting the juice. It is a very sweet and blissful state. Campbell says it's like the moth circling the flame, which is behind the glass, but somehow it gets through and becomes one with the flame for an eternal instant. It is beholding God, but the separation still exists. Meister Eckhart, the 13th century monk, said, the ultimate leave-taking is the leaving of God for God. How do I leave God for God? This means leaving the folk idea of God, the ecclesiastical idea that you have been taught for that transcendent reference of God, which is all metaphor. This is the return of the hero. This is returning with the jewel. This is coming back with the Christ consciousness. So that's why you hear this story over and over and even in the Bible. And when you finally get to chakra 7, you see God, you go past God, and are in the transcendent Brahman without characteristics. Chakra 7 is the thousand-petaled lotus. That's the seventh chakra. It's located at the crown of the head. At this chakra, there's no person to be conscious of God. I first read about this level in the book By the River Pedra, I Sat and Wept, another book that I picked up out at Asilomar. And if, for those of you that don't know at Asilomar, it was the annual conference for religious science. When I first came into the teaching, I went 14 years in a row because I was just growing so spiritually every time I went out to that conference. I actually stayed in the same room, and I tease you because I always chose the same room, and it's almost like I was in the closet and I marked my head where I was the first year I went, and the second year I went, and the third year I went. Of course, my physical body, the height was exactly the same, but my spiritual growth in those 14 years that I went and marked on that closet were tremendous. Absolutely tremendous. So when I learned all of that, I started understanding with God. But By the River Pedra, I Sat and Wept. Though that book has the same three levels of growth going on, but there's at the chakra 7, there's a minister rolling in the snow naked. He's taken off all of his clothes, and he's just rolling in the snow naked. And his girlfriend that's trying to get there wants to talk to him and pull him out of the snow, saying, what are you doing? You're rolling in the snow, which down here, there's snow. Chakra 1, 2, and 3, there's snow. But he was in chakra 7. There was no snow. There was no clothes. There was nothing. He was just rolling in this understanding of the absolute. That's what he was rolling in. And so here at chakra 7, you're inert. You're a catatonic knockout. The return of seeing radiance everywhere. So this is why you hear Paul on the road to Tarsus is blinded because of this radiance everywhere. You hear of Ernest Holmes that he was in the middle of giving a talk up at a podium in Whittier, California, and the bright light came to Ernest Holmes while he was standing there in Whittier. So how many of you experienced this? How many of you experienced this rolling in the snow naked, not knowing you're rolling in the snow naked? I have a couple of times. And it's people that have brought me there. It's my conscious mind that finally lets the subconscious mind come in and allow something like to come through. And where it really was helping me with was By the River Pedra was the first one that I sit there and going, what is he doing rolling around in the snow? And did I have to think about that for years as to what that meant? But it was Joel Goldsmith, and reading Joel Goldsmith time and time again, Joel Goldsmith was sitting there saying, David, you need to let go of the I am. There is no I am. The rest of Christianity is telling you about the I am, the I am. And he says, David, all you need to go to is the I. Go to the I. When you understand the I, Are you in that level? So I've done it a couple times, and both times that I went there, was it for an immediate half second. But the immediate half second was eternity. The immediate half second that I was understanding that I was in chakra 7 was an understanding of eternity. So now, the whole key to this whole system is chakra 4. Chakra 4, the heart. The lower three, upper three chakras, not 7, just 1. Remember that. Don't tell Paul. David's up there talking about chakras. Up there. You will, but anyway. Campbell says the chakra system is a pathway of energies from the root to the crown via the heart, in which the growth of the spiritual life uses the experience of the physical incarnation. It's the means by which we first overcome, then transmute our human animal natures in order to experience our true spiritual identity. It's going through all of that. So we have the three areas, the three aspects of the one life. Living in the world, how mythology relates to the lower centers of energies, chakra 1 through 3, the pelvic centers, the physical and social aspects of human existence, having to do with marriage, money, work patterns, patterns of aging, procreation, death, ritual. Then we come into awareness, focusing on the opening to the spiritual aspects of life. Here, the center of the heart is the heart chakra, where the energy that's been projected outward to correct the world is finally turned inward. And you understand, once this starts changing, that changes. Once this starts, how many of us are running our lives putting out fires to come back and put this fire out again and put this fire out again? When you are running out there, outward projection with coming up with a solution, you're going to put out fires the rest of your lives. When you turn that projection inward and understand exactly the same thing, chakras 1 through 3, it's all out here and it's all projected out here. The top three chakras, when you project them in this way and understand the power that you come from, then living in the sacred focuses on this ascendance to this realization of God. That's what happens. There's a transformative nature of you that occurs. So this is why I got excited about Peggy Noonan saying, the eye knows more than you do. When you realize your eye is not just the lower three chakras of seeing the world and placing into different categories that your mind made up with an agreement to society. So we've all made up an agreement that this is the male category, this is the female category, this is the black category, this is the white category, this is the success category, this is the failure category, and we want to place all of our things in all of those different categories so that we can label them. But when your eye does something like that, your eye knows that there is none of that at the higher chakra levels. There's none of that. When you look with that eye and have the awakening, you no longer see egos fighting for a place on this physical planet, but equally as centers of the mind at large, each in his own way, at one with the all. I want to share something with you. For those of you that were back here in December, I shared with you All the Light We Cannot See, and I gave that talk on December 21st, which is the longest day of the longest night of the year. And so that book has become number one in the country. It actually won the Pulitzer Prize in 2015. So I'm trying to open you up and share you All the Life We Cannot See. Another book that was number one last week is this one right here, Between the World and Me. And I want to share to you, just I want you to hear what chakra they're talking about, how society has come in and things like that. So this is a black man telling his black teenage son, I'm writing a letter to you. I'm writing a letter to you. But I just want to read this, not to incite anybody or anything like that. I just want you to see with what I just shared with you about the different levels of chakra and where society comes in and tries to rule at the lower three levels, and nations try to rule at the lower three levels and everything. And that happens everywhere. That's what this whole power of myth is about. That's why I love this class on the power of myth with Joseph Campbell. But listen to this. We live in a goal-oriented era. Our media vocabulary is full of hot takes, big ideas, and grand theories of everything. But some time ago, I rejected magic in all of its forms. This rejection was a gift from your grandparents who never tried to console me with ideas of an afterlife and were skeptical of preordained American glory. In accepting both the chaos of history and the fact of my total end, I was freed to truly consider how I wished to live. Specifically, how do I live free in this black body? It is a profound question because America understands itself as God's handiwork, but the black body is the clearest evidence that America is the work of men. I have asked the question through my reading and writings, through the music of my youth, through arguments with your grandfather and your mother and your Aunt Janie, your Uncle Ben. I have searched for answers in nationalist myth in classrooms, out on the streets, and on other continents. The question is unanswerable, which is not to say futile. The greatest reward of this constant interrogation of confrontation with the brutality of my country is that it has freed me from ghosts and girded me against the sheer horror of disembodiment. I only want to, that's one paragraph that this guy is writing to his son. The reason I want to share that with you is how societies have set up with the lower three levels of the chakra level and understand that. And they set up the rules and everything like that. But where this book ends up going is for the father to sit there and say, moving into the heart chakra, amongst all of that, know there's something greater. There is a way to be alive, to be really alive. And that is a place that is really, really wonderful, because that's the truth in your life, that's the truth in mine, and so it is. So let's let go of those seven words of chakra. David's never going to say those again. And let's come back to the oneness and the understanding of what it is that we are. There is this universal life, this universal mind that is everywhere present. It's present at the farthest reaches of the universe, and it's present all the way right here in this room through each one of us. That universal mind is expressing through you, through me, through everything that's in this building. That universal consciousness has pushed itself through. And when it comes through, it doesn't just show up as David or Angela or Patrick. It shows up as an infinite number of ways, ready to become an infinite number of more things. And when we let go of the smaller ideas that society has about the way life is to be lived, do we finally give this universal consciousness a chance to come through? Our eyes will really know where to look from this point forward. We are not looking at the dualistic nature of life. What we're looking at is the oneness of life. We see the oneness everywhere present. We see the oneness in all the relationships. We see the oneness within the countries talking to each other. We see the oneness within our own little lives back at our families and the oneness that are happening within our families. That's what we choose to see, this oneness, this great universal mind of love and courage and power and beauty showing up in each one of our lives. That's what we choose to focus our minds on this day. We let go of the smaller things. We let go of the smaller confusions, because that's not the truth of us. We grab onto the greater. And the greater is the understanding that it's not just each one of us struggling to make it at the lower levels of consciousness. It is all of us with all those levels of consciousness coming through in our humanity and beautifully as our spiritual being as well. We bring both of those along. We no longer set one aside for the other. We walk through this world as spiritual beings having a human experience. We give great thanks for this understanding, and I release my word to law, knowing as I have spoken my law, that that has gone into universal mind, universal consciousness, and as each one of us steps out that door this morning, our lives are greater than they were when we walked in here. There's greater in love, vitality, careers, health, all of those things. The abundance of the universe is ours. That's what we recognize. We announce it as our truth. And so it is.